this is Derek Frost from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading to you from the Triangle Business Journal. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. And we start on the front page of the Triangle Business Journal with the headline for the cover story. Wanted, luxury home buyers. Sales of million-dollar-plus Triangle homes are creeping up, but the market has a long way to go to reach pre-recession levels. And that's the headline on the front page. The actual story begins inside the Triangle Business Journal with another headline. In search of affluent buyers, sales of million-dollar-plus homes are less than half of 2007's level. And this article is written by Amanda Hoyle. When doctors Glenn and Karen Coates, designed and built their French Normandy-style dream home on the outskirts of Lochmere in Kerry, they included a cellar with room for 3,500 bottles of wine. We really had planned to invest in some wine, he says, but then we realized that people who do that tend to not have children. We didn't love wine that much. That the same could now be said for the house, valued at nearly $3 million. Now that two of the Coates' three children are in college, they've decided to put the 12,279-square-foot house on the market and move closer to their son's new school and new friends. The gated property is in immaculate condition and has had several showings since going on the market earlier this year, but the average time it takes to sell a home its size in the Triangle goes up exponentially with the price, real estate data show. The Triangle housing market overall has about 5 months' worth of inventory available for sale, but for the luxury housing market, it's closer to 15 months of supply. That may be better than the 32 months of supply during the middle of the Great Recession, but to sellers looking for an exit, the wait is long, the demands are many, and for a few of them, the stress is immense. At the peak of the housing market in 2007, there were 273 homes of $1 million or more sold in the Raleigh-Durham market, which includes Wake, Durham, Orange, Chatham, Franklin, and Johnston counties, according to residential research firm Market Opportunity Research Enterprises. Today, about 100 to 115 units are being sold on an annual basis, less than half of what it was at the peak. The new normal. That statistic does not include new custom-built homes like the Coates's that are built every year on land already owned by the future homeowner. It also doesn't take into account the value that many luxury homes and luxury home lots lost when they were sold by banks and other lenders for dimes on the dollar during the housing downturn. We had bought lots in the upper $400,000 that we had to sell for under $100,000, remembers John Rufty, president of Raleigh-based Rufty Homes. There were a lot of sleepless nights, a lot of stress on marriages, and a lot of people got out of the building industry. Rufty estimates that less than half of the 150 luxury homes he's built in the region over the past 25 years would have ever been recorded in the county deed records because they were built on land already owned by the client. Plus, the market for builder-owned homes of $1 million or more built on spec, which would be recorded in the public records once sold, is almost non-existent now due to banks needing new lending and risk formulas. We used to build multiple specs per year, but those days are pretty much over, he says. There are still a number of luxury houses out there you can pay an attractive price for, but it still may not be exactly what you want, Rufty notes. With the market coming back now, if they have time, they are spending a little extra to get exactly what they want again. In the last year and a half, Rufty says, the luxury housing market has begun to feel normal again. He currently has five homes in the $2.5 million to $5 million range under construction across the region. In 2013, he had three. But Rufty also remembers in the 1980s, when a $360,000 home he was building at McGregor West in Kerry ranked among the most expensive homes underway at that time. I've seen people's tastes change, and I've seen the wealth that Research Triangle Park has brought to our marketplace, as well as the change in the value of a dollar, he says. Similar economic recovery statistics are reflected in the region's wealth migration numbers. Between 1992 and 2010, Internal Revenue Service income data for Wake County reflected a gain of $4.59 billion in new wealth coming from new residents relocating from other counties, states, and foreign countries. By 2011, the wealth migration calculator for Wake County had increased to $4.77 billion in annual adjusted gross income. The energy factor. The difference between the luxury home buyer request now versus pre-recession is more emphasis on building for low maintenance and efficiency. They may be moving into a house that is three times larger, but their energy bill is half what it was in their old home, Rufty says. Glenn Coates notes that when his family first moved into their large carry home in 2005, their power bill was around $1,200 per month. We even brought in an efficiency expert to check the air pressure cycles, but they told us it was the largest airtight house they'd ever seen. Coates instead found other ways to save money on his electric bill. He installed 50 solar panels on the roof of the house, one of the largest residential solar arrays in the region. His electric bill now ranges around $400 a month. On a good month, it's only $200, he says. Marketing today's mansions. The real estate agents who specialize in the luxury home buying market are also turning their attention again to topics of staging, marketing, and availability of jumbo mortgage loans of $417,500 or more. We all had to learn how to do a short sale, which was new for all of us, says Linda Kraft, president of Linda Kraft and Team Realtors, referring to a deal where a home is sold for less than what was owed on the mortgage. For 2 years, all we talked about was how to deal with banks and those kinds of issues. Now we're back to talking about how to decorate. If there is any softness still left in the Triangle luxury market, you couldn't tell on a recent fall afternoon when the ladies of the Luxury Home Marketing Group gathered for their monthly tour group meeting. The 14 members, representing eight leading residential real estate agencies in the Triangle, collectively represent more than $300 million worth of new and existing homes currently listed for sale in the Triangle. Its purpose, says member Kathy Beecham, an agent at Coldwell Banker, Howard Perry, and Walston in Raleigh, is to share ideas on how to better market a home, improve its chances for a quicker sale, and maybe fetch a little higher price. We share our marketing plans, our checklists for clients. It's a cooperative effort to take care of the client, Beecham says. Under recommendation from the Luxury Home Marketing Group and its agent, the Coates family has dropped the price for their 7-acre estate in Cary, but Glenn Coates says he's under no financial pressure to sell the home that Karen Coates spent 2 years planning and designing with their architect and builder. My wife made a piece of art, he says. I made a lot of efficiencies. I'm not going to give it away. And along with this article, there's a short section headlined, Readying Your Home. If a home doesn't have a garage or swimming pool, be prepared to show plans for how and where it can be built. Make sure to have all the lights turned on before a tour and have someone ready to turn off all the lights after you leave. It can sometimes take 30 minutes to turn all the lights on and off in a big house, realtor Linda Kraft says. Take out all of the clutter and get rid of any worn or dated furniture or decorations. If a quick sale is needed, hire a professional stager to bring in furniture and decorations, an extra cost of about $3,000 to $4,000 a month for a large home, to help potential buyers visualize a room's dimensions. Make it look like a model home, Kraft says. It doesn't take long for a vacant house to look vacant. And now we turn to Biz, a quick glance at Triangle happenings, written by managing editor Rebecca Troyer. Golfer committed to Raleigh agency. Webb Simpson, 2012 U.S. Open champion, is partnering again with Neighbor to Neighbor to expand its presence on the corner of Blunt and Bragg Streets to allow the mentoring and community outreach organization to better serve families in Southeast Raleigh. Neighbor to Neighbor provides academic programs, job training, and other activities for kids and adults who live in Raleigh's most economically challenged neighborhood. Webb has partnered with Neighbor to Neighbor to help the organization increase the number of kids and families that it is able to work with. North Carolina's own craft beer, now on tap. For only 1 week, beginning October 16, a craft beer brewed by more than 20 North Carolina craft brewers using local ingredients will be available to taste. Each tap room or brewery participating in serving the beer will tap one donated keg, and proceeds will go to the North Carolina Craft Brewers Guild. Commercial craft brewers from across North Carolina, most of which are located in the Triangle, came together in late August at Hillsboro's Mystery Brewing Company to create the first guild recipe. The beer is a ghost style, a sour wheat beer with a hint of salt, and hence the beer was named North Carolina Goes West. That's Ghost, G-O-S-E. The ingredients include barley and wheat from Riverbend Malt House in Asheville, Outer Banks Sea Salt from Southern Shores, Muscadine Grapes from Lou Mill Vineyard in Dublin, and fresh wet hops from Pittsburgh's Farm Boy Farms and Chapel Hill's Piedmont Hops and Three Horses Hops. In the Around Town section, theater season kicks off. Fur Ball raises $224,000 for SPCA of Wake County. The North Carolina Theater kicked off its 2015 season, October 14, with 9-time Tony Award winner A Chorus Line. On October 9, the NCT treated donors, friends, and actors to an evening of food, entertainment, and pampered services at Raleigh's Synergy Spa. Donors were treated to complimentary manicures, massages, and more, while listening to cast members of A Chorus Line perform various songs. NCT's president and CEO, Lisa Greel Berry, was on hand to share details about the new season. The SPCA of Wake County held its annual Fur Ball on October 5 at NC State University's State Club, hosting about 600 guests. The event raised $224,000 this year to help the animals of the local Wake chapter. The highest bid of the live auction was a vacation package titled Christmas in New York, and donated by David Bassnight of Beechwood Tours. The item went for $5,000 and was won by Terry Evans of Black Rhino Enterprises. Work meets fitness. Band With on the Run, 200 miles across North Carolina. Bandwidth founders David Morkin and Henry Kessner ran from Raleigh to Atlantic Beach October 10. Well, at least part of the way, the pair were part of a team of 48 representing the Raleigh company at the Tuna Run 200, a 200-mile relay race from Raleigh to Atlantic Beach. The rest of our employees, those that didn't participate in the Tuna Run, did a running challenge to enter to win a free day off, says Noreen Allen, Chief Marketing Officer. And in a section called The Hype, cities and institutions in the Triangle and across the state make headlines in recent national rankings. Number 2, UNC Chapel Hill's Dean E. Smith Center's rank for court design, ESPN. Number 7, Chapel Hill's rank among rank amount, best college towns for people who aren't in college, Condé Nast Traveler. Number 15, Duke University's rank among top 50 MBA programs, College Choice. And number 19, UNC Chapel Hill's rank among top 50 MBA programs, College Choice. And in the You Said It section, readers' Facebook comments on the story, Uber and Lyft both get an F from the Better Business Bureau. What a joke. The BBB is an archaic, meaningless leftover from a pre-internet economy. Down the road, Uber and Lyft will inevitably have issues, but right now, they're fixing an industry no one liked in the first place. That's from Zach Medford. Looks like BBB is part of the anti-Uber conspiracy. Sad they're willing to lose their credibility so willingly, all in an effort to support the protectionist taxi cartel. That's by Kenneth Hunter. And finally, I think any relatively new service or business model that people are still trying to understand has room for improvement. However, I've used Uber a number of times in a half a dozen cities and haven't come across a single thing that I didn't like. Aaron Wendell. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the A Better World page. And first we start with the column written by Todd Cohen. Todd Cohen publishes Philanthropy North Carolina. The headline on his column, Center Helps Plug Funding Gaps. 3 years ago, unable to keep up with growing demand for the baked goods she prepared in her home in Holly Springs, Jackie Green turned to the Support Center, a Raleigh-based nonprofit. The Support Center made a $200,000 loan to Green and helped her get technical support from the Small Business Center at Wake Tech Community College and the Raleigh chapter of the Service Corps of Retired Executives. Green used the funds and advice to move Sweet Cheeks Bakery out of her home to a retail location off Highway 55 in Apex and hire 2 employees. She says she is on track to turn a profit by early next year. I would have not been able to do this without the Support Center, she says. Founded in 1990 as the North Carolina Minority Support Center, the agency initially provided assistance to a network of 18 small minority community development credit unions, mainly in eastern North Carolina. But 4 years ago, after the network dwindled to 3 members, the organization rebranded itself as the Support Center and shifted its focus to small business lending and technical assistance, as well as policy work on small business issues. If we were going to be viable and relevant, small business lending was a great void that needed to be filled, says Linwood Long, CEO and co-founder. Since 2010, the Support Center has provided nearly $12 million in loans to at least 150 small businesses, supporting more than 350 jobs. In 2013, it made $6 million in loans and expects to lend at least $9 million this year. Small businesses generate more than 85% of new jobs in the state, but typically fail within their first 5 years, often because they lack access to capital and technical expertise on issues such as marketing, operations, and matching supply and demand, Long says. The Support Center has secured low-interest state and federal loans and grants, and low-interest loans and lines of credit from banks and other financial institutions. It also makes low-interest loans to small businesses, mainly those owned and run by minorities, women, and veterans. It has secured nearly $1.3 million from the U.S. Department of Agriculture, $1 million each from the U.S. Small Business Administration and the state of North Carolina, nearly $3.4 million from the Community Development Financial Institutions Fund of the U.S. Department of the Treasury, $500,000 each from TD Bank and Wells Fargo, and a line of credit totaling $1.5 million from PNC. Over the next 5 years, it aims to secure $35 million. It has set a $500,000 goal for its inaugural fund drive, which kicks off October 30. This work is value added to the state, Long says, and to the economic recovery of the state, and to small businesses as they look for capital they cannot receive from banks. And now the next section is nonprofit news. Fletcher Foundation supports youth. Raleigh's A.J. Fletcher Foundation has invested more than $2 million in its East Durham funding initiative, helping 11 organizations carry out comprehensive and sustainable development and revitalization strategies. In the last 5 years, we have proudly supported East Durham's community effort to address basic human needs for the thousands of residents living in poverty and facing vulnerable, unstable conditions, says Fletcher Foundation Executive Director Damon Sercosta. Nearly $500,000 has been given to East Durham Children's Initiative, EDCI, the backbone organization in the community-wide effort. EDCI works in partnership with nearly 24 area organizations to connect children and families to interventions that address barriers to academic and social success. MetLife furnishes computers to kids. MetLife technologists are partnering with the Cramden Institute to refurbish 80 computers and load those like-new desktops with the latest in educational software provided by UberMix, all for local families. Raleigh area teachers nominated students they felt would benefit the most. Half of the students receiving computers are children of veterans and active service members in North Carolina. And now we turn to the reporter pages in the Triangle Business Journal. The first page we come to is that of Amanda Hoyle, who covers commercial and residential real estate. The main headline, Seen and Heard on the NAIOP Bus Tour, a close-up view of the Triangle's hottest new office developments. One thing was abundantly clear October 9 after a full day as a real estate tourist with the NAIOP Research Triangle Bus Tour. The Triangle office market is back on offense. The amount of construction activity happening in the Triangle's urban cores, downtown Raleigh, midtown Raleigh, and downtown Durham, has not been this active in decades, and there's still enough momentum to prop up new projects in the suburbs of West Raleigh, Cary, and Morrisville. It was the first NAIOP bus tour of the Triangle's major submarkets in 6 years, but with nearly 1.4 million square feet of new office development underway or starting soon, NAIOP chapter president Tom Fritch said it was time to bring the tour back. So for 6 hours on October 9, a motorcade of three buses carrying about 150 commercial real estate industry professionals, escorted by four Wake County Sheriff's deputies, disrupted traffic to and from and through the most active office development projects in the Triangle. Here's a sampling of the day's events. 9 a.m. at the kickoff event from the Stock Room at 2:30, across from the recently renovated 227 Fayetteville Street building in downtown Raleigh, Empire Properties announced its first tenant signed for the 11-story 227 building. Vital Source Technologies will be taking 20,000 square feet, or about two floors in the building, by the end of the year. 10:30 a.m. The first stop is at the Glen Lake 5 building in West Raleigh. The six-story building will be the fourth office building in Highwoods Properties' Glen Lake Park, featuring a more modern design with more glass than its sister buildings. 12 p.m. Lunch at the Carmichael, the newly redeveloped 115,000-square-foot Duke University laboratory and office building in downtown Durham. It's expected to be the first phase of development for the new Durham Innovation District, or Durham ID, which could add another 1 million square feet of new office, lab, retail, and residential space to downtown. 1:30 p.m., bus stop at Perimeter Park to tour the fifth floor of the new six-story Perimeter 3 office building, developed by Duke Realty Corporation. It is, so far, the tallest building in Perimeter Park and is almost equidistant from downtown Raleigh and downtown Durham. Construction of its next office building, Perimeter 4, is expected to begin in November. 3 p.m., bus stop at Alliance Center on NC State University's Centennial Campus, where Craig Davis Properties' new five-story office building is well underway. 4 p.m., the final stop brings everybody back into downtown Raleigh for a reception at Jimmy V's Osteria Bar on Fayetteville Street to learn more about the 11-story Charter Square office building rising across the street. And now we have the reporter page for Jason DeBrun, who covers healthcare and biopharmaceuticals. Hospital scales back. Franklin Medical Center in Lewisburg will significantly pare back its inpatient services and lay off 21% of its full and part-time workforce. The hospital, managed by Winston-Salem-based Novant Health, will continue to offer emergency and outpatient services, but the hospital will reduce from 85 to 15 inpatient beds, with 13 of those reserved for geriatric behavior patients. The hospital is not closing or de-licensing any beds or operating rooms and intends to remain a licensed acute care hospital. Of the 85 beds, the average daily patient count has been only 18, with 7 of those occupying the 13-bed geriatric unit, according to Novant reports. Largely because of the low patient volumes, Novant projects a $6.1 million loss at the facility this year. Hospitals in North Carolina and across the nation feel the effects of declining demand for inpatient care combined with reduced payer reimbursement, said Patrick Easterling, Novant Health Senior Vice President of Consumer Operations, in a release statement. The hospital laid off 59 workers from many departments. A Novant Health spokeswoman emphasized that the emergency department, staffed by board-certified physicians, will continue to operate in the same manner. Novant Health's investment in a 7,500-square-foot geriatric behavioral health unit in 2012 will continue to provide for the special mental health needs of older patients, a growing and underserved population nationally. Novant Health is a four-state integrated network of physician clinics, outpatient centers, and hospitals with more than 1,200 physicians and 26,000 employees at nearly 500 locations. Biotech firms lead the pack with IPOs in Q3. Biotechnology companies continue to dominate the IPO market, with companies in that sector representing 32% of all initial public offerings in the third quarter, according to market research by Renaissance Capital. When factoring out Alibaba's $22 billion IPO, the third quarter this year had fewer total dollars raised through IPOs than in two of the past three quarters, and fewer total IPOs than any quarter since the first quarter of 2013. Factoring in the major deal, however, brings the total raise to $37 billion in the quarter, more than any quarter since the fourth quarter of 1999. Although the IPO market is showing some small signs of cooling off, it's still elevated by historical standards, according to the Renaissance Capital third quarter report. Year to date, IPO activity includes 206 offerings, the most since 2000, and a 36% increase from last year. Any concerns of froth in the IPO market are tempered by the fact that over half of all IPOs, mostly the biotechs, priced their shares below the proposed range, according to the report. The median deal size in the third quarter was $92 million, down from the second quarter's median deal size of $100 million. Green light for Salix's ulcerative colitis drug. Raleigh drug developer Salix Pharmaceuticals received final approval for its ulcerative colitis drug Uceris. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration had given Salix tentative approval in mid-September, pending resolution of patent issues. The Crohn's and Colitis Foundation of America, CCFA, estimates that UC may affect as many as 700,000 Americans. While most people are diagnosed in their mid-30s, the disease can occur at any age and equally affects men and women. About half of all patients with ulcerative colitis experience at least mild symptoms, including persistent diarrhea, accompanied by abdominal pain and blood in the stool, and more urgent bowel movements. CCFA also notes that people suffering from UC often experience loss of appetite and may lose weight as a result. A feeling of low energy and fatigue is also common. Salix categorizes Uceris in a grouping of products to treat inflammatory bowel diseases. Those products recorded a combined $138 million for the first half of this year, or about 18% of overall revenue. And now we turn to the reporter page of Lauren Onasorge, who covers technology and entrepreneurship. Duke grad brews new energy drink. Meet Mati Energy, spelled M-A-T-I, Energy, the product of Duke University grad turned food entrepreneur Tatiana Bergeson. It has more caffeine than a Red Bull, 3 green tea cups worth of antioxidants, and as much potassium as half a banana. And it's homebrewed in Durham. Mati, now in 30 Whole Foods stores across the Southeast, is an invention born from depression in a college dorm room at Duke University in 2012. I wanted to sleep all day, she says, but her Duke class schedule didn't jive with that inclination. So I needed something to stay awake. First, she looked at energy drinks, but recoiled, horrified by the ingredients. Like many undergrads, she turned to the bean. But in order to make coffee palatable, she needed 7 packets of sugar. So I decided to start brewing tea, she says. In her dorm room, she brewed tea in a pot, refrigerating the extra so that she could drink her 4 or 5 cups a day. This was not the first concoction made in my dorm room kitchen, she laughs, but it was the first concoction that her friends actually wanted to try. At some point, somebody said, maybe you could bottle this and sell it. So she bought an 8-gallon pot and some kegs, soon replacing black tea leaves with the more caffeinated guayusa leaves. Early customers were tech companies in Durham, such as Shoeboxed. In order to get the product onto shelves, she knew she'd have to can it, so she entered the Duke Startup Challenge and won, giving her the cash boost she needed. Armed with cans, she went to Whole Foods and let the store try her tea. 6 months of paperwork and filing, the tentative yes turned into tea on store shelves. So far, she doesn't have any employees, but she's talking to investors and hopes to hire 2 people in the next few months. From grants, competitions, and family and friends, she's raised about $150,000 to date, she says. And in the He Said It section, our company is called Industrial Heat. Our job is to make industrial heat, and industrial heat is made by coal. We don't think any energy should be made by coal, so that's why I'm doing this. Tom Darden, on the reason his new company, Industrial Heat, is investing in a controversial nuclear technology aimed at eliminating coal. The technology was developed by controversial Italian scientist Andrea Rossi. It's a black box that, according to reports, uses cold fusion to generate large amounts of green energy cheaply. And in the Startup Watch section, 10 North Carolina startups to watch. The North Carolina Technology Association has tapped these 10 startups as startups to watch in 2014. BioMason in Research Triangle Park, growing bricks instead of baking them. Tappity in Charlotte launched a time tracking app. Validic in Durham, helping connect to digital health technologies. Windsor Circle in Durham, personalized marketing programs. Organic Transit, Durham, solar-powered car-bike hybrids. Next Glass in Wilmington, creating a platform that helps you select wine. nCino in Wilmington, integrated banking operating system. Blue Gas Marine in Apex, powering boats with natural gas. Boss Key Productions in Raleigh, video game studio created by Cliff Blazinski. And Docs Inc. in Wrightsville Beach, simplifying a physician's workflow. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the reporter page of Dawn Wallace, who covers small business personalities and Triangle trends. RDU says Lake Crabtree Park will stay. The Raleigh-Durham International Airports Authority Board is considering developing office space on a parcel of land near Lake Crabtree County Park. And while a local cycling group has raised concerns, RDU says the park is not in jeopardy. We have no intention of using Lake Crabtree County Park for anything other than a park, says Mindy Hamlin, RDU Communications Director. The confusion is that there is a parcel of land adjacent to the park that may be studied for development in the future. RDU owns all 215 acres on which the park is located. The Urban Land Institute recommended in a study conducted in March that the airport should consider developing offices in the space. The area RDU has considered developing is within a 149-acre tract that runs along Interstate 40. It could mean 98 acres of that tract would be converted into 1.2 million square feet of office space, according to ULI's recommendations. Lake Crabtree County Park Manager Drew Cade says the tract is referred to as the FATS parcel, F-A-T-S, because of the original mountain bike route that developed the 9 miles of trails within the tract that he says nearly 100,000 people visit every year. The tract of land RDU is considering for redevelopment butts up against the tract of land that contains the boat rental house, fishing deck, pier, and boat ramp. When asked about how the plans could directly affect the area's bike trails, Hamlin says, The development would be on top of the trails in some cases. ULI also recommended in its presentation to the board that the bike trails would be attractive to potential businesses. This parcel has always been in RDU ownership, says Way County Parks and Recreation Director Christopher Snow. It's just leased to the county. We always knew RDU had other plans for this property way into the future. We just didn't know how far. There had been conversations every 5 years since 1994, but it's never come up that, hey, we're looking at this seriously. RDU hired ULI to do the study for them, and that was kind of a notice for us that this was more serious this time. This is the most heavily visited county park in Way County, he says. About 300,000 visitors every year is our average. About a third of those are trail users. No one comes in here and sees parcel lines. The Airport Authority generally renews the lease every 5 years with Way County. The lease expired December 31, 2013. The renewal process takes several months to finalize. Hamlin says a new lease is being negotiated. The tract on which the fishing pier and boat rental sits is on a 40-year lease. The lease for the land has not yet been presented to the board. And in an entertainment section, cartoon duo tries to make a sitcom out of comics. The creators of Man vs. Liver, Paul Friedrich and Neil Hinson of Raleigh, have been working on bringing what was once a cartoon on a napkin in a bar to the TV screen with the help of an executive producer from ABC's Desperate Housewives. The cartoon features a man in a suit with a witty quote relating to his drunkenness and has been published in books and even has a female counterpart. The creators have since then brought their cartoons to coasters, bar towels, and other gifts and accessories. What's something you didn't expect in the process? We didn't expect to be talking about Man vs. Liver as a TV show at this early point in this franchise. Hearing an award-winning television producer call our pilot script the most demented, hilarious thing she's read since the Arrested Development pilot was shocking in the coolest sense of the word. And in the By the Numbers section, the growth of clean energy industry in North Carolina. $2.6 billion. Private investments in clean energy from 2009 to 2013. $8.1 billion. Projected private investment over the next decade. $2.67 billion. North Carolina's revenue from clean energy projects from 2007 to 2013. And $135.2 million. The state's incentives during the period. The source of this information, Navigant Research, RTI International, and North Carolina Sustainable Energy Association. And now we turn in the Triangle Business Journal to the Executive Voice column, and the feature is on Stephen Saad. And this is a question and answer column. The closer look information listed in a separate box, name Stephen Saad, title Co-Chair, Criminal Defense Division at CSH Law, age 33, education, J.D. Campbell Law, residence, Garner, family, wife, Crystal, first job, Wake County Assistant District Attorney. And this question and answer column was written by Don Wallace. The headline, Kicking Up Interest in Foot Golf. Raleigh attorney has a passion for soccer's softer alternative. In the past 2 years, foot golf courses have popped up around the country, followed by local leagues and tournaments. Stephen Saad, co-chair of the Criminal Defense Practice Group at Cranville, Sumner & Hartzog, LLP, explains foot golf in his own words as the prestige, elegance, and frustrations of golf married to the popularity and passion of soccer. He's one of the Triangle's biggest proponents of foot golf and is currently helping design North Carolina's sixth course in Greenville. He was also the winner of the Foot Golf Premier National Tournament in Indianapolis in April. There are three courses in the Triangle. The state's first foot golf course was established in Buies Creek at Keith Hills Golf Club at Campbell University. The second course is located at North Green Country Club in Rocky Mount. And just last month, the Triangle got its third course in Wake Forest at Heritage Golf Club. In April, there were 100 courses in the U.S., and today there are about 250, Saad says. What do practicing law and playing foot golf have in common? Competitiveness and patience. As a defense attorney, every case is David versus Goliath, my client against the unlimited resources of the government. You need to have a competitive edge and a confidence in your abilities to take on those fights day after day. Patience is just as important. Frustration will get you nowhere, in the courtroom or on the course. There is nothing you can do about the last hole you played. You can only relax and concentrate on your very next shot. What is your favorite thing about foot golf? Two things, the competition and the courses. Soccer is an unforgiving sport, and as I grow older, I'm happy that there is an alternative sport that allows me to use the same skill set without the constant sprinting and tackling. I can compete in foot golf at a high level for a long time to come. Golf courses in North Carolina are some of the most beautiful natural areas anywhere. It is a treat to be able to experience them through foot golf. What keeps you inspired? As a defense attorney, I am constantly litigating for my clients' constitutional rights and civil liberties. Freedom is literally on the line. Having a vocation where these grandiose American ideals are always in play keeps me inspired. Where do you see yourself in 5 years? Continuing to grow the criminal defense practice at CSH, expanding the practice to include more attorneys practicing criminal law. Describe your fantasy foot golf course. My dream course would be fairly long with a lot of water and elevation changes. It would have a good number of difficult dogleg right holes since I'm left-footed. What's your biggest pet peeve? Tardiness. What's one thing you can't do without each day? My wife and dog, right? After the obvious answers, I'd say the New York Times crossword and my daily Arsenal FC news. What's the strangest response you've gotten about foot golf? I've had a few people ask if it hurts to kick the golf ball. This question comes before they realize that we play with soccer balls. What's your favorite vacation destination? London. My favorite soccer team is there, and going for matches is always a big treat. And this edition of the Triangle Business Journal also includes a section on the CIO of the Year Awards, Chief Information Officer, and we'll read one of those articles for the Lifetime Achievement Award. The headline, Technology Guru for a Global Giant, Lenovo's CIO, Security is Today's Biggest IT Challenge. And the Lifetime Achievement Award was given to Jerry Frelick with Lenovo USA. Former North Carolina CIO Jerry Frelick says the private sector is an interesting change. Now the chief security officer for Lenovo's Think Business Group, Frelick gets to narrow his focus and leverage CIO contacts to further a brand. They were basically looking for somebody who could come out and tell the Lenovo story, he says. And it turns out he's a pretty good storyteller. Instead of worrying about everything, it was data centers, networking, all of it. He's focused on product security. He's the man responsible for making sure the supply chain is secure and monitoring who touches what, a job that snagged extra scrutiny as Lenovo worked with regulators during its recent IBM server acquisition. 50% of the time, he's traveling, often talking to the same types of C-level executives that he talked with as state CIO, selling the message in a way only a CIO can. When you talk to another person, a CIO, you speak the same language, Frelick says. It delivers some credibility. And don't expect him to retire anytime soon. I wouldn't know how, he says. Title, Chief Security Officer. Age, 67. Company description, PC, tablet, and mobile device manufacturer. Birthplace, Syracuse, New York. Family members, wife Joni, 2 daughters, 1 granddaughter. Education, BS in economics, Lemoyne College. MS in Computer Science and Management of Information Technology, American University. Why information technology as a career? As a fire direction control specialist in Vietnam, I recommended to our fire base commander, 155 howitzers, that I could use a computer to help calculate the necessary charges, elevations, and directions that were sent to the cannons to make the rounds reach their destinations. I was intrigued by the thought of the power of a computer that could make a job a lot easier. I got a forerunner of a PC, but had no generator to power it. That's where the love of information technology started for me. It has carried over through my entire career, and especially now at Lenovo, where we make the world's most innovative PCs that enable consumers and businesses to do their jobs. What is the greatest challenge you face as CIO? Has that changed in the past couple of years? Having retired twice as a CIO, both at the federal level and at the state level in a cabinet position, I think the biggest challenge today for a CIO is how trustworthy are the devices that are on an enterprise network or that can access the network. Everyone is concerned about security, and the focus is shifting to IT products, companies, and how secure are their supply chains. Being part of Lenovo gives me the opportunity to showcase that we have the most reliable, secure, high-quality supply chain and products for customers around the world. What's a misconception people have about CIOs? CIOs are invaluable assets to any organization. The acronym CIO does not mean career is over. CIOs are enablers of the business and play a critical role to the success of any business. What ideas have you brought to your organization? One idea was expanding documentation that shows the built-in security of Lenovo products. The other was to document our validated supply chain and the IT industry could use as a model. Favorite IT crisis story? As the CIO of the Office of Justice Programs at the U.S. Department of Justice, late one evening the Network Operations Center called to inform me that the ceiling in the data center was leaking. I asked if it was sewage, because if it was, I would call the federal GSA to have them assist us. My network engineer said no, it wasn't sewage, it was beer, coming from either of the two restaurants, Beers of the World or the Irish Pub. Needless to say, I thought about getting a mug, but protecting the equipment and data was my first choice. What's your dream job if you weren't a CIO? I'd invest in classic cars and set up a storefront to sell to potential buyers. I'm somewhat of a car junkie. I used to restore British sports cars. I had five at one time just for weekend driving. What's an obsolete item you just can't get rid of? Probably two items. I still have a boom box in my garage, but I can't get rid of my Sirius XM portable radio and my Scotty Cameron putter. What's your favorite app? My favorite app is the ESPN app to help me catch up on games and scores. What do you like best about living in the Triangle? The Southern culture is unique. I also enjoy the fact that no one has any trouble in sharing their faith and stories. It's a beautiful place to live and raise a family. What's something not many people know about you? My birthday is on Halloween, so it's a double celebration for me. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the People on the Move section, and in the spotlight is Jeff Benson, Executive Vice President, COO, and General Counsel at the Dilwegg Companies. After more than 20 years as an attorney at Kilpatrick Townsend, the past 3 years of which he served as team leader for the firm's real estate team, Jeff Benson has been tapped as Executive Vice President, Chief Operating Officer, and General Counsel at Durham commercial real estate firm the Dilwegg Companies. Benson now helps lead the daily operational efforts of the company, manages all its legal functions and services, coordinates investor relations, and works with lenders and investors on acquisitions, recapitalizations, and dispositions. I am thrilled to be able to use my legal and management skills to help an entrepreneurial organization take its next steps, Benson says. I feel like the Dilwegg Companies has made tremendous strides in growing and maturing as an organization over the past few years and is on the cusp of being a very special and successful venture. The Dilwegg Companies was founded by Anthony Dilwegg and employs about 30 people, all of whom are located in the Triangle. What's one thing you wish people knew about your job? How excited I am to join a company that is well-led and positioned to take a giant step forward. What are some of your major goals in this position? I want to join with the rest of the leadership team to chart a path and then execute a plan that will serve our investors, lenders, and tenants while helping the company grow our Southeast portfolio. I also want to forge long-term partnerships with investors to provide a permanent source of funding for expansion. Biggest pet peeve? The Eeyore, whose negative comments and attitude weigh down an organization. Biggest worry? I'm a lawyer, so I worry about just about everything. That said, I try not to worry about inconsequential matters and instead keep my focus on the issues that matter most to an organization. Education, BA from Middlebury College, Master's in Public Policy, and JD from Duke University. Personal, wife, Kanita, children, Zachary, Eric, and Grant. Last book read, Good to Great by Jim Collins. And now we turn to the viewpoint page, and first we read the editor's notebook. And this is written by Sugata Mukherjee, who is the editor of the Triangle Business Journal. The headline, Mother of All Earnings Seasons is Upon Us. By now, we all know what is going on with the various indices on Wall Street. They are taking a beating, and all of them have given back the gains they made this year in a period of a few days. The Dow is in negative territory, the S&P 500 is down, and about 9% from what it was little more than a month ago, and the NASDAQ composite just went through the worst three-day rut since 2011. For Triangle executives looking to close deals, whether it be a merger, an acquisition, or a big investment in a capital project, this is the time to look for indicators that may help them understand the economic strength of the nation. And they are in luck. The earnings season is here. Already in the past few days, big banks started reporting on their quarter, and the markets eased somewhat on October 14, following Citibank and Wells Fargo reporting better than expected earnings. Charlotte's Bank of America followed the next day, showing a loss, but primarily because of the $16 billion plus mortgage settlement with federal and state authorities. Otherwise, the bank had a pretty good quarter. If everyone believes that markets falling by 10% or more is a sign of correction, then one would infer we are there already. The fundamentals of the finance, tech, and healthcare sectors suggest that may not be the case. That's why the next 2 weeks may lay the groundwork for things to come in 2015. For the Triangle, which is so heavily dependent on the entrepreneurial sector, a volatile capital market is never a good sign. It stops investors from pulling the trigger. When you have a backdrop of the Great Recession, being skittish, worried, and indecisive is completely understandable. If companies start posting soft earnings and margins, the markets may use the numbers as multipliers, and bears are going to come out of hibernation. I can't recall a quarter in recent years that is as important as this one. In the middle of 2011, the CBOE Market Volatility Index, VIX, that measures the market's state of mind, was clocked at 42. To put that in perspective, if VIX registers more than 30, there should be alarm bells in the investment community. It is around 28 right now. If companies are coming out with robust earnings despite the bad news coming out of Europe, deflation, Middle East, oil, it should qualm investors. But if companies start missing their targets, we may have a very, very poor October on our hands. Another big question mark is the Ebola story. So far, the story in the U.S. has centered on Dallas, where at least two healthcare workers were infected with the virus after caring for a Liberian national at Texas Health Presbyterian Hospital. According to a recent report from the World Bank, if Ebola spreads to neighboring countries beyond Liberia, Guinea, and Sierra Leone, the economic cost would reach beyond $32 billion. Let's hope we don't get to that point. But we also recognize hope cannot be used as a strategy. So these confluence of factors make for a very interesting month for business owners, investors, 401k holders, and investment managers. That also could determine the Federal Reserve's next move, which until now seemed like it just wanted to stay on the sidelines. And with the minutes we have left, we'll read as much as we can of the guest column on the Viewpoint page. And this one is written by Jonathan Lamb. He is a 32-year-old consultant who works in the capital and debt markets, and he lives in Apex. The headline on his guest column, his opinion is, "You know nothing about millennials, neither do I." If you think you understand economics, you are full of it. If you think you understand millennials, you are really full of it. I am a millennial, and I don't even understand myself. Combine millennials and $1 trillion of buying power, and you have a few unknowns. There are at least laws of economics, such as supply equals, always equals demand. As complicated as economics gets, it boils down to common sense and a few basic laws. No such luck for understanding millennials. Millennials are the most educated group of people the world has ever seen. However, they are slowly losing basic common sense. What will happen when the millennials are the breadwinners of our society and economy? With rising education and diminishing common sense, what will happen to our laws of economics? So why do we care about millennials? They make up 25% of the U.S. population, with more than 80 million. The millennial population is larger than the baby boomers and 20% bigger than Generation X. Researchers, marketing departments, and economists have spent countless dollars and time studying every generation. They have established basic core values, wants, and buying patterns that were shaped from events of each generation, such as war, tragedy, or technology, but not the millennials. And we'll stop there as he goes on to say the millennials will likely bring change, but we'll have to wait to see what that change will be. And we'll stop there as we've run out of time for today's episode of Triangle Business Journal. Be sure to listen at the same time next week. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Derek Frost, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. The program is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast. And you can contact us at 919-832-5138. So long until next time.